Hello, everybody. This is Andrea. Welcome to the Smith Inc. August webinar and podcast episode. If you are joining us live today, you have the opportunity to ask a question at any time. Just use the Ask a Question function on your GoTo webinar control panel, and that will be answered at the end of this session. If you're viewing the recording or listening to the podcast later and would like to ask a question, feel free to contact us directly at smithinc.com. Now I'll hand over to David Smith, Smith Inc. Director, to present 7 performance measures to focus your team. Over to you, David.
Thanks, Andrea, and good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining this webinar. I'm going to quickly, over the next half hour, just give you some thinking around team performance measures, which we've found to be successful in managing teams. The first thing that I wanted to really talk about was what people are currently measuring in firms. And no surprises here that we find most firms are still using percentage productivity or productive hours as a key measure of performance of team members, and then obviously things like billing numbers and write-off numbers and the like. And I get concerned about the use of percentage productivity from a whole variety of, and productive hours from a whole variety of reasons. And the sort of issues are that, you know, firstly, people aren't 100% honest with their timesheets. That's really the first point. But the second point is it really doesn't measure what's important to clients and what's important to make the firm operate effectively. So I think there's a lot better measures that we need to be putting in place to ensure that we get the right performance out of our individuals and the right performance out of our teams. And whilst productive hours might form part of the overall equation, and I'll come to that in a minute, I really don't think it's something which should be focused on too much. I've found many times that in many firms, the over-focus on percentage productivity and productive hours can actually be quite negative on team members. So with that in mind, let's just circle back up to 30,000 feet and think a little bit about what we're trying to achieve. And the first thing which I think every firm needs to do is to really think about, well, what are the objectives? What are the sorts of things, the sorts of activities which will give value to our business and give value to our customers? And so that can be things like turnaround time of work, for instance. It could be client satisfaction. It could be staff member satisfaction. There's a whole lot of things that we could be measuring, which are measuring more of the output that we're generating than the input that we're creating, which is really what productive hours sort of measures. And then the question is, if they're the sorts of outputs that we're trying to optimize, the question is, what are the actions that we need to implement in the firm that will actually achieve those results? So we need to refocus these performance measures around the outcomes we want to achieve and the actions that we need to implement to achieve the outcome. And then by doing that, you can then help your team to really focus upon what's important. The next element of any performance measurement system, and this is critical in my opinion because this is where I find most firms fall down, is that just having the scoreboard to manage to measure performance doesn't cut it at all. What we need to be ensuring we're doing is we're actively managing them. So if we've got a performance measure in place and a team member is aware of that performance measure, they need to be reporting back how they're performing. If they're not hitting their performance benchmarks, they need to be saying, these are the reasons why I haven't been hitting my performance benchmarks. And they also need to be saying, and this is what I'm going to do over the next period to ensure that I get back on track and I am hitting those performance benchmarks going forward. And that applies whether or not the performance benchmark we're talking about relates to the individual or whether it relates to the team. We need to ensure all the time that we're actively measuring it, and we're actively monitoring it, and we're actively keeping people accountable, and turning any poor performance or underperformance back to actions which are going to take us the right way forward. And this is the area where I find the vast majority of firms fail, in that they don't spend enough time really keeping people accountable and turning underperformance or poor performance into specific actions which are going to get the performance right going forward, which also will drive the right sort of outcome. So if you take nothing else out of this presentation, a focus on the accountability piece of it is something which you, regardless of the measures that you put in place, needs to be a key element of how you manage your firm going forward. Now, the thing which I get very passionate about and very keen on is the fact that when we put performance measures on anybody, those performance measures must be a performance measure that the person or team feels as though they have control over. One of the problems with percentage productivity, for instance, is that you might set a percentage productivity target on an individual, but they may get hijacked by the need to do training or the need to do some admin work for the firm. And all of a sudden, they're not hitting their performance benchmarks, but it's nothing to do with them because they've been asked to do these other things, or perhaps they haven't had enough work assigned to them, in which case, again, they don't hit their percentage productivity target. And so that can be quite demotivating for the team member as they're looking at this and thinking, well, I've got this performance benchmark, there's nothing I can do about it, and I'm not appearing as though I'm performing very well when it's outside their control. So number one issue is put benchmarks in front of people that they have control of. And so when you get down to the individual accountant doing accounting work, in my opinion, there is one key benchmark which should be used to monitor that individual performance. And that is that you make team members responsible for the number of hours a job should take. So before a job is allocated to a team, when a job is allocated to a team member, you say to that team member, you have 7 hours to do that work. And then it's up to the team member to manage to that 7 hours. So then when you're doing your daily stand-up 5-minute meetings with each team member, one of the questions that you would be asking those team members is, what are the jobs that you don't feel as though you're going to be able to do them within the hours allocated? Also, you say to the team member, you're not allowed to blow the number of hours that you've been allocated to this job unless you come and talk to me first. Because as you're well aware, the reasons why there's multiple reasons why there could be a blowout in time. It could be that the budget's wrong, in which case we need to fix that. It could be that the client's given us really bad information, in which case we need to go out back to the client and say, well, there's a problem with your information. Either you fix it, in which case there'll be in which case we'll stop work until you do so, or we'll fix it, in which case there's an extra fee to be paid. Or it could be that the team member's been given poor instructions, or it could be the team member's doing wrong work. In all those cases, we need to get onto it early before the time has actually been spent and lost. So you need to make the team member accountable for that time, and they need to be ringing the bell if there is an issue. Now, some people get concerned about this because they're saying, well, how do I ensure that I get my productive hours that I need out of the team member? And the answer to that is you fill them up with work. And so if you fill them up with enough work and you give them enough hours budget and you give them deadlines for when the work's due, you'll get your productive hours out of them. But they're focusing on the hours for the job, which is the critical piece. Now, the second element, which is really important here in terms of setting those hours budgets, is that those hours budgets should have nothing to do with the fee that's actually charged, because the fee charged is about what you can charge for that work. The team member has to be given a realistic estimate of the number of hours for the work to be done by them. Now, that means that if you've got a star senior person, you'll give them less hours to do the job than a more average, more junior performer. And so you're really customising the amount of hours based around that particular team member. And that's, again, a way that you can optimise and ensure that you're getting high performance out of your team. So this focus on hours budgets is a critical element. And many of you would be aware that I'm a passionate believer in resource planning in a firm where you're setting your whole work plan for the year, stating which month you're going to be doing work and which team member and how many hours it's going to take. And so by setting that resource plan, you're setting up these hours budgets and the team member is aware of how much time the work should take them. So, again, this is such a critical piece, and in talking to team members, they understand this and it works much better for them. The other element to this as well, and I've talked about this over and over and over again, and I don't have enough time in this webinar to really get to the detail, but I'm a big believer in an end of job review as well. This is where you sit with your team member, the reviewer with the doer, and you spend 10 minutes reviewing how well they did the job. And the value of this is that team members want that regular feedback, and it gives a chance to focus on the things that they could do better. It's a chance to focus upon how we could reorganize the client to do their work better. And it's a really valuable exercise to ensure that we're improving the team member and we do the work more effectively going forward. So many firms apply this end of job review technique, and it really does work. But when the compliance vortex kicks in and everybody is busy as all hell, this is one of the first things that gets dropped. And you need to have the discipline in place to ensure that something like this end of job review happens regardless of the amount of pressure in the firm, because it's such a critical component to continuously improve how we do things and to give the team members feedback and to keep them accountable. And then the last element, of course, is for a team member's perspective, is to give them quality performance reviews, or as I'd like to call it, a career development plan. There's a lot of research at the moment which is saying the big, complex, fill-in-the-form performance reviews don't really cut it. And I'm into very short performance documents, and I like to call them a career development plan, which is really focusing on that employee, on where are they heading in their career, what can they delegate to other people, what new tasks can they take on, and how can they improve themselves. And again, if you focus your performance review system around developing their career, they will align to that much better. And one of the outcomes of a career development plan is an agreed action list of the things that you're going to do as a firm to help them develop their career and the things that they're going to do themselves to help develop their career. And once again, you can create the accountability around that by having regular quarterly or half yearly meetings to review how people are going compared to the agreed actions in that career development plan. So that's a good summary for the individual. Focus on hours to do a job, focus on end of job review, focus on career development plan. The other thing which we want to try and do is that we're trying to change behaviour here, and we're trying to do things differently. And changing behaviour is hard. And so here's three examples of outcomes that we're trying to achieve. Many of you would have know about Mark Holton and I talking about the need to do holistic needs reviews discussions with every client every year to discover the issues that a client has and to allow us to assist clients with that broader spectrum of issues they may have in their business or their personal financial lives. Many people struggle to do those needs reviews, so we need an accountability system which records when they're done and set for people a performance criteria on ensuring that they're doing those needs reviews for their clients. So I believe you need some level of tracking system for that to track that needs reviews are actually occurring, because they are such an important element of client relationship and also growing new opportunities for the firm. Equally, asking clients for referrals is really an important element as well in terms of growing the firm. The number one reason why clients don't refer is because they haven't been asked. Second reason is because they think you're too busy. And we need to ensure that we're recording when you ask for referrals, and we can create a performance benchmark around the number of times that you ask for referrals, and we just need a system to record that. And then lastly, measuring new clients that are being won. I believe that all senior people in the firm need to have a new client's target. It may be a small number for some people, but at least gives them a bit of a focus on ensuring that when they're standing on the side of the football field while their kids are playing football, they may engage in a conversation with a parent standing next to them, with a little bit of focus around, you know, what's of interest to that parent, and start to get a conversation about what's happening in their lives. And all of those conversations over time will lead to opportunities. So we need to be tracking these things, and those three measures that I've got on this screen are great examples of measures which are very outcome focused. Focused on more holistic advice, focused on getting referrals, focused on winning new business. It's always important to come back to the client and say, well, what's important to the client, and are we measuring the things associated with which the client would value? And I think many firms fail to do this. One of the most important elements for a client is turnaround time and responsiveness. You know, some firms do try and track it, but we don't actively measure it, and we don't actually develop our planning and our processes to achieve a result here. But in my mind, if you can't achieve a regular less than 30-day turnaround time, I think that's a major problem. It's another reason why we need to do good resource planning, because that's a key element of turnaround time. But I do think from a client perspective, achieving turnaround time targets is a really critical element to paint a good picture and create a great service for clients. So I think that's an important element. Client referrals I've already spoken about. I think measuring that creates the incentive to be asking for referrals. We should be tracking things like complaints and client churn. All too often I see firms tracking things like new clients, but not tracking lost clients. That can encourage a conveyor belt type scenario that new clients are coming in and other clients are spinning off the end. Share of clients' wallets is an interesting style measure as well, because that's sort of tracking when the client's paying for external advisors, what share of that are you getting? For instance, a client might have an external business coach and the like. You know, in my mind, that's the sort of work that you should be getting. So just having a quick look at your client P&L to determine whether or not they're using other advisors and whether or not you should be improving your share of the client wallet in terms of advice is worth tracking as well. A number of firms are now tracking client satisfaction by survey. And I'll come to that a little bit later on. That's worth thinking about. And if you've got other divisions in the firm, like financial planning or finance or whatever it may be, you should have referral measures in there as well to ensure that referrals are happening across the financial planning. They don't need to be big numbers. For instance, many firms, I'd recommend that all you need is one referral per partner per month type of thing, or one referral per team per month. But they don't have to be large numbers, but over time it adds up and creates the right outcome for the firm. So I've spoken about client satisfaction in that last slide, and surveys is clearly one thing that you can do, but also the problem with surveys is that not everyone will complete them, and depending on how you ask the question, you may not get the answers you're looking for. So many firms then will move to a different scenario of having like a client consultative group where that's externally facilitated. You get a dozen clients in the room and you workshop them about what are important and what are the issues. And I've done probably 50 or 60 of those over the years. And interestingly, one of the key elements that comes out of it, and the number one piece of feedback that I've got out of all those client consultative groups, is that I wish my accountant would do more things proactively to help me improve my business or my personal financial position. So there's clearly a desire from clients for more proactivity out of the client consultative groups that I've run. Some firms do a little back of the fee note survey covering the sorts of issues that I've got on this slide. If you are going to do that type of very quick little dipstick type surveying, yeah, happily do it, but don't ask many questions. You want to encourage people to fill it in and return it. So the sorts of questions on the slide here are the sorts of things that you may wish to think about. Then we've got the internally facing financial KPIs, things like revenue per person, revenue per client. I think revenue per client is a really good measure. That encourages you to do the needs reviews and broaden the service offering to client, revenue from new services that you're creating, and things like lock-up percentages and the like. So, yes, we need to be having those financial KPIs as well. I've got a whole lot listed there, but we need to be on top of that. With teams, I believe that each team, and many of you are aware I'm an advocate of a small teams environment, and I think each small team should have its own targets. So a production target is dollars going into the work in progress ledger, assuming that you're doing time-based, you're doing timesheets. And whilst that's could be regarded as productivity by another name, it's actually set by a team, not by individual. And so that's important then for the team lead to be conscious that they need to create a certain amount of production every month, because without that production, you can't hit a bill. But it takes the pressure off the individual team members to actually be hitting a productivity percentage. The team lead is responsible for allocating the work to the team members to ensure they've got enough work on their plate so that they'll hit the production targets. Billing targets, write-off targets, managing the WIP balance, I think all of those should be at team member level. I don't believe collections should be, though. I think that's an admin task, and the admin team should have a performance measure around debt collection. You can also have KPIs, non-financial KPIs for the team, things like morale, which some firms measure just by having some little smiley faces, happy face, intermediate face and a sad face, and people have to sort of just tick a box once a month, and they can measure and monitor their team morale that way. Team turnover, number of suggestions you get to improve the firm, all are different ways of measuring how you're managing the team effectively. Now, all of that earlier presentation is all giving you a number of ideas about different measures that you could have in your firm. And I think that that's fine, but there's a couple of issues which I think are really important here. And the fact is that I think if you wandered around your firm, you probably already know who the great performers are and the poor performers are. And the issue for me is don't lose sight of the value of just walking around and dealing with people where you're seeing performance not being up to scratch. You know, once people have performance measures in front of them, human beings are smart people and they can work out how to manipulate those measures to make themselves look good where their performance elsewhere may not be as good. So management by walking around and just observing is also a key element of this, and ensuring people are getting regular feedback. And lastly, the biggest trap that I see associated with all of this is having too many measures. So I've listed quite a number of measures here in this presentation. I'm not suggesting you should apply them all. What I'm suggesting is you look, consider what is really important to your firm. What are the things that you need to do to improve your service with your clients, to improve your firm performance, and really measure those things and play the rest of it down, or don't create a huge amount of different measures in the firm, because I think it confuses the message for the team and it creates an admin nightmare of having to monitor multiple things. It could be that in 1 year you're going to focus on one or two issues. The next year you might play those issues down, and you might then focus on some different issues in the next year as you change the focus of the area of your firm which you would like to improve. So it's really trying to come up with a pragmatic solution that gives you a limited number of performance measures which you might apply to an individual, that you might apply to a team, that you might apply to the firm as a whole, and to ensure that you put enough structure in place that you actively measure those things, and that you keep people accountable for those things, and you turn the performance monitoring system into an action-based system where when performance is not up to scratch, people have to agree actions that they will implement to enable them to get themselves back to scratch with their performance measures. So I hope that I've run through that at 1,000 miles an hour. Obviously, all of these slides will be available to you with the listing of all of the performance measures that I had available on that. But just in conclusion, think about the three areas. What can you do with the individual? And the individual, in my mind, is all about this job, so many hours. That's the principal criteria. What can you do at a team level? And in my mind, that's about production targets, billings targets, write-off targets, referrals to other parts of the firm's targets, needs reviews targets, those sorts of things. And then at a firm level, you might have wider financial performance statistics that you may well manage and monitor. So I hope that's been of help. I'll hand back to you, Andrea, for any questions.
Great, thanks, David. I do have a couple in already, so if anybody else would like to ask a question, just type that into your ask a question function and I'll read that out for you. The first one is actually just a comment from Peter, who has said, time costing rewards slow thinking. Don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Oh, yeah, I think that's a fair comment. I fully agree. What you actually want people to do is to do the job in half the time. There's nothing in percentage productivity that encourages people to do the job in half the time. And if you can do it in half the time, there's an opportunity for a super profit. So I fully agree.
Great, thanks, David. The next one I have is from Philip, who's said, David, do you advocate setting charge rates to $1 and working off hours budget for each job? Billing is then based on value.
I'm comfortable with that. If you're going to do that, the performance measure, which I think you need to be working strongly with, is your average hourly rate you recovered on a job. And set that as a target in your firm. Monitor that job by job. And if you're not recovering that hourly rate, you need to work out whether you're mispricing that job or whether you've got an efficiency problem. So I don't have a problem per se with that. But I do think if you are going to do that, you do need to be actively measuring your average hourly rate recovered.
Great, thanks, David. That is actually all the questions we've got so far. So, of course, if you do have any more, anybody, please just contact us directly at our emails or via the website smithinc.com. Thank you, David, for presenting today. And thanks, everybody, for joining us.
Okay, thank you all.